Hey, investors, in this episode, I'm going to go over your most powerful due diligence tool, and that is the investment deck that you get. Now, anytime you're investing in a fund or syndication, one of the first things you're going to look at is the deck. Now, the sponsors will put this together, or the fund manager will have one, and it's going to go over essentially, it should answer most of your questions, if not all of your questions on the deal. And I'm going to go over four things in this episode that are absolutely mandatory. And not just that, but they're not included in every single deck that I've seen. And if they're not included, typically it's an immediate disqualification of the deal, in my opinion. And there's a couple of reasons why. I'm going to get into that here in a little bit in the show. But this came from a good colleague of mine sending me a couple of decks. And he said, "Hey, I want to know your opinion on these investments. You know, what are your thoughts? I've never heard of this group. They come recommended and I met them through this. They sound really good." And I was looking at the decks and these four things were all missing. And while it might look good on the surface with these four pieces missing, it's an absolute deal breaker. Even if one of them is missing, it's a deal breaker to me. But with all four, it was like an all stop, no way to do it. So to me, these are four phenomenal things that have to be in the investment deck. Otherwise, it's a deal breaker for us. So the first thing is a sensitivity analysis. So a sensitivity analysis is a study that the operator should do that's going to include different scenarios and what that does to your return. So one scenario could be on the low end, essentially, hey, what's the bad case scenario? Let's say our cap rates end up increasing, you know, if the market rate right now is 5, let's say they go all the way up to 6.5. And then on the other side, hey, let's say things shake out really well and cap rates drop down to 4. So this is how it'll impact your return. It'll either turn you into a 3x equity multiple or maybe just, you know, a 1.25. And also they'll have different segments. It'll all say, hey, if one is cap rates, the other is rent growth. If rent growth is 0 versus if rent growth is 5 and we projected 3, you know, here's what that's going to do to the returns. So it should show you a sensitivity analysis of what is essentially like a very, very best case scenario, what is what we would consider to be a very worst case scenario, and likely the projected returns that are actually in the deck and in the financial pro formas are usually right there in the middle. So they want to paint a picture of, hey, what's the downside that could happen? What happens if cap rates expand? And then likewise, what happens if they compress? What are the options there? What are the opportunities? How do the returns get impacted either positively or negatively? So that should give you a really good spread. Now, the sensitivity analysis is one thing that I always look for in the deck, not just because I want to know what those actual numbers are and what those scenarios really are, but it shows you how much the operator stress tested things and if they truly have gone through and thought about what could happen in the downside of this deal. What happens if the market turns on us? You know, what kind of runway do we have to work with? So that's the one thing. Sensitivity analysis, absolutely non-negotiable for me. The second thing is the debt terms. One of the very first things I do when I'm looking at a package is I'm looking at the debt terms. And this is because debt is the number one killer of real estate deals in the commercial space, especially when most debt, when we say long-term debt in the commercial space, you're typically talking, you know, 7 to 10 years. It's less likely to have those 30-year mortgages like you do in single-family homes. So debt can really put you in a bind if the terms are not favorable to you. So it's common in value-added real estate to see debt terms that show something like 3 + 1 + 1. This means the debt term is a 3-year term and you have two options for 1-year extensions. Now, those 1-year extensions are massive because if in 3 years, when the debt's due, if the market's not in your favor, you want to have those 2 extra years to ride the market out or to wait for more favorable interest rate environments. We're going through that right now, where if we did not have an extension option on two of our loans, we would have had to sell when interest rates are essentially at the height of their markets. But because we have our extension terms in our pockets, we can extend that loan and give us 2 more years to wait for interest rates to drop, which most experts believe right now over the next 2 years, rates will drop. So those extension terms can become invaluable and aren't typically something a lot of people think of until it's maybe too late or they wish that they had locked in these rates or these terms. So that's the first thing in the debt. The next thing is if it's fixed or floating rate. Now, a lot of people right now are sprinting away from floating rate debt. And part of the thought process is good. Floating rate debt is what's gotten a lot of people in trouble over the past, year and a half, where they have floating rate debt and now that debt's coming due. And it's on the receiving end of, the most aggressive interest rate hikes we've seen in the last 40 years. So part of it is not something that a lot of people anticipated, but it's causing a lot of pain in the markets right now. And because of that, a lot of people are sprinting away from floating rate debt. And part of the thought process is a little bit flawed because most experts agree that we are at the height of interest rates right now. So if we're at the height of interest rates right now, it may not make sense to fix your interest rate because, I mean, you're essentially admitting you're fixing it at the highest rate it should be over the next couple of years. So right now, I think the sentiment is a little bit incorrect that, hey, we should flee from floating rate debt. I think there needs to be certain caps and other due diligence in place to leverage it effectively, but I'm not generally seeing it be smart to fix your rate right now because we're really at the height of the market. Now, it could be different business plans, different plays. There could be other terms in the debt that make it more favorable where maybe you can refinance into lower rates in the future, but that's historically not the case with fixed rate debt. So that's something to consider, fixed or floating. Generally, floating will give you more options, more flexibility. You just are more susceptible to the market. And of course, right now, we feel like interest rates are at their peak. So just be aware of when you want to use fixed versus floating rate debt. But that's another thing I'm going to look at when it comes to the debt. The next thing I'm going to look at is the amount of leverage we're using. Leverage meaning the loan. So if I am buying a property and it's $1 million and I'm taking out $700,000 of loans, I am using 70%. I'm going to use 70% leverage. A conservative amount of leverage gives you more cushion in market downturns. More leverage, essentially, think of it this way, it amplifies deals. So if you have a good deal and you use more leverage, it makes the deal great. If you have a bad deal or a deal goes south and you have more leverage, it makes that even worse. So you want a balancing act of how much leverage to use. Anything really below, at or below about 70%, 75% maybe, most people would consider to be very conservative. So a lot of times if people say they're using low leverage, 75 or less percent, I would consider to be, pretty low and pretty conservative. Anything above 80%, I'm probably not doing unless there's very special circumstances or reasons why. That's one thing to really consider. You want a little bit of a balancing act between how much leverage you're using. So that's what I wanted to the sponsor or the operator just crank the leverage all the way up in an effort to amplify returns. If they did, you better be very, 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 very confident in that business plan because that amount of leverage, if the deal goes sideways, is just going to amplify your issues. So those are the debt terms I'm looking for. I'm looking for what's the term of the debt. 3 + 1 + 1 is common, but that lets you have essentially more time to work through markets. Is it fixed or is it floating? And understand market dynamics of when it's more advantageous to use fixed versus floating rate debt. And how much debt are we using? Understand that debt is an amplifier. It's going to make the good even better. It's going to make the bad even worse. Now, the third thing I'm looking at in these decks are the sales and rental comps. Now, I sometimes will look at decks where they only have rent comps, but I want to see sales comps too. I'm specifically looking at how much either dollars per what we call per door have sold for. So if you have, each unit costs $50,000, I want to look at the comparable sales over the past few years. Are units selling for more than that or less than that? Why? What were interest rates at time of those sales? So we need to know what the sales and the rental comps are. And I'm going to look at the price per unit on the sale comps. I'm also going to look at the sale per square footage. That's another thing that helps you get a better lay of the land for how valuable that land is there and maybe how effective the units are being constructed in that area. So sales, price per door, or price per unit and the dollars per square foot. I'm looking at those for the sales comps. And of course, in the rental comps, I want to make sure that the rental projections are not way off center, and we're just expecting to blow every other apartment out of the water. I want to be pretty even keel with the other rental comps, possibly even a little bit below them. Now, the next thing, and this is one that I don't see on very many decks, but it absolutely has to be on every single deck that I invest in, is the break-even occupancy. Now, this tells us if the property was at a certain occupancy, what would that occupancy have to be for us to still be able to pay our bills, pay the debt service and not have to dig into our reserves. I would say 80% occupancy is a very conservative and safe place for a break-even occupancy to be. Now, this may vary based on the business plan you're executing on, but if I see 80%, that's pretty safe. That means the property can be 80% occupied and we're still paying our bills, not digging into our savings. And to give you a little bit of the benchmark, most stabilized properties, you consider a property to be stable when it's above 90% occupancy. So a good occupancy rate for a good healthy market will be about 93 to 95, 96%. So that gives you a lot of cushion to, you can dip into 80% and still pay your bills. So again, those are four things that are just, they're non-negotiables in things that I look at. I'm looking for the sensitivity analysis. I'm looking at our debt terms. And within that, I want to know how long the debt is in place, what extension options we have, is the rate fixed or floating, and then understanding the market dynamics to know when's the best time to leverage both of those strategies, and the amount of leverage we're using, how much of the purchase price is financed through debt. I'm also looking for sales and rental comps. A lot of decks will only have one or the other. I need to see both. And then I'm looking for our break-even occupancy. Now, in the beginning of this recording, I mentioned, you know, these themselves being present in the deck is important and their answers are important. But one thing that is very telling to me, if a sponsor or an operator does not have these things in the deck, that just tells me that they have not really worked with a lot of very sophisticated investors. So even if you don't see these on the deck and you just ask, hey, what's the break-even occupancy? There's a good chance that if you're talking to the underwriter of the group, they will know. But the fact that it's not in the deck is just a red flag to me that maybe they haven't worked with sophisticated investors before, or maybe they just didn't know to put that in there, or maybe they're a little bit smaller of a shop and they're used to raising money from just friends and family who aren't really going to ask those questions. So yes, the information in these key points is very, very important. But what's also very important to me is that this operator has the foresight to understand that they work with sophisticated investors who want to know this information. And that in itself is telling as well. So again, I hope this was helpful. Decks are going to be your biggest due diligence tool as a passive investor. That's how you're going to eliminate a lot of deals and save yourself a lot of time. And that's what you're really going to dive into to know that you're getting yourself into a good data-backed deal.